You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are back and it is Mike and Mike, and we are going to be talking all about the Amazon TV series, The Boys. You know, I've heard rumors that, you know, a lot of people are going, you know, this show is one of the best superhero adaptations we've ever seen from the comic books. Other people are saying, I never heard of it. So it's going to be interesting to see where we come in with this. It's a lot of fun and it's going to be interesting to talk about. And we got a great crew to line up about it. Of course, let's say hey to my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
You are one of the boys, of course.
Yeah, the boys are going to be talking about The Boys.
It's a good thing to do.
And yes, and we will just throw it out there front and center. We will be spoiling season one.
So oh, yeah.
If you have not watched The Boys, just be warned because we're going to be talking all about the beginning, middle, and the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And there's some shockers in this one. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, it's available. It's only 8 episodes. Go ahead and watch it. We'll sit here and wait. We don't have anything else.
Spoiler alert. We liked it.
We did like it. We did. Of course we liked it. Duh.
We wouldn't be devoting a show to something that we didn't like.
Exactly. So it should be a lot of interesting stuff, and we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. Please write us, of course, at earthstation1 at esonetwork.com. If you want, also, you know, you could leave feedback, you know, via email, or you could talk to us up on our Facebook group or Twitter or even, you know, Instagram. We have plenty of ways to find Earth Station 1. We are everywhere social media is available. And of course, we also have our Patreon, where you can actually hear this show 48 hours before the rest of the world. So it's a little bit of a bonus and a way of saying thank you to our patrons. It's a pretty cool deal. With that being said, you know, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we have a lot to talk about. All right, Mikey, what do you got this week?
Well, I thought that we might be keen to talk about, because I don't think we've actually talked about it either on the air, really, or off. And talking about the British invasion, and I'm not talking about the music British invasion. I'm talking about the British invasion that happened in the late 80s in comics, where we had Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis, and a bunch of other folks that seemed to come from across the pond and made huge splashes in comic. Basically, it's set like reset a lot of things as far as comics goes. I mean, certainly the Americans were doing fine, and you know, we had our Todd McFarlanes and our Frank Millers, but you know, you were in a unique position because around that time is when you owned your store, right?
Yeah, of course. I owned my store from I think it was like 1990 till about 94.
Okay, so that was right on the kind of in that time period, right? I mean, obviously, Watchmen had come out before that, and Alan Moore had established himself as the guy. And I think because of Alan Moore, that opened the door for a lot of British writers and creators to come through and be taken seriously by American publishers, right?
Well, Alan Moore was probably at least, I would want to say, 5-6 years before that, actually.
Sure.
And, you know, because you had Neil Gaiman, who came to prominence with Sandman. And because Sandman's run had already finished by the time I had my store.
Wow. Really? And I thought it had gone into that.
Probably 91 it might have ended. And then we also had, of course.
Because really? I think I moved to Atlanta in 93. And I think that Sandman was still going on then.
Well, we got the internet. We could check it out.
That's all right.
So, but, you know, because I know I sold my run of Sandman, which was the full run,
right,
as part of my payment to move to Seattle.
75 issues? Is that how I'm talking
about? Yeah, just about.
Yeah.
And I know they're coming back with a new, whole new series. And, but yeah, you had Neil, you had Alan, you had, you know, and then you had the, they were the start, but then you had, you know, with Watchmen, and you had, you know, everything, like you said, Swamp Thing, and you had, you know, Dave Gibbons doing artwork, you know, and it was just amazing the influence and the influx of English writers, and that had opened, and was mostly DC. That was welcome.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was mostly DC and particularly Vertigo, I think, that were really housing that. And I guess mm-hmm. we have Shelley and Karen to thank for that, right?
A lot of it, yes.
Because, I mean, that's when, I mean, we're going to be talking a bit later about The Boys, and, you know, Garth, I think, is a product of that.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison is another one that came out around that was starting to get more work in American comics that way. And they, the thing about it is that they weren't just telling us, like quote unquote, normal, everyday, average superhero stories.
No, they didn't
talk about what they were doing. If they were doing superheroes, they were kind of flipping the script a little bit. It was always something unique about their take on it, or they were giving us something besides superheroes.
Oh, definitely, because if you remember, you know, you had the introduction to, like, characters like John Constantine, who is, like, the most non-superhero you can get.
It was Sting, right?
Exactly. Well, at first he was, the way he was drawn. And, you know, Sting 30 years ago would have been a perfect for the movies as Constantine, because, you know, it was literally right out of the books. And it was interesting to see, you know, what these writers brought, because they brought the type of stories that you didn't have here in the United States, either, you know, more horror based, more goth. And it was just really awesome to see. And it, even when they did typical superhero stories, they were not your typical.
No.
You know, the last Superman story, you know, that they did, you know, which was amazing. And, or you had, you know, stories that are now classics, you know, were created by English writers, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. There was a lot of, I'm not saying that, you know, we Americans were not doing anything at that time.
Oh, no.
There was a lot of American, there was a lot of creativity on this side of the pond, because we had, like I said, Frank Miller was huge then. Mike Mignola was coming into prominence. Et cetera, et cetera. But as far as the Brits goes, I just find it interesting that, you know, they came through, they seemed to come, like, it was like literally an invasion. And I'm just mentioning the big names. There were several others that came through as well. And they just seemed to offer something different. Like when you read one of their stories, they were a lot of times more mature. They would push the envelope. They would discuss, or they weren't afraid of topics that were maybe above the reader's heads, you know, like they didn't treat their readers like idiots.
No, they didn't dumb down to them.
Right. I mean, you know, I can remember reading Grant Morrison's The Invisibles and just like not knowing what the F I was reading at the time. And it really took, I had to read an issue like multiple times in order to just like, sort of reconcile myself with it and go, what did I just read?
Well, it was the same way with Sandman. When we first got the first couple issues, it was like nothing we had ever seen before.
And no, but I think Neil is a little bit more of a, I don't want to say traditional, but yeah, in some ways a traditional storyteller. Like he's really good at his craft, but he's not gonna like mind-blowingly blow your mind. Because he, like, to him, I think his story is most important.
Yes.
Whereas I get the feeling like with someone like Grant Morrison, concept is the most important thing.
Well, Grant is like a total concept writer. And half the time when I read his stuff, I know I'm going to be in for a ride that I'm never going to forget. Or I'll look back and it's like, what the hell did I just read?
Yeah. Like, what drug did I just take? Like, when I was reading The Invisibles, it really felt like I was taking a drug.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that if I should have taken a drug while reading it, I don't think it would have made sense to me, because it really felt like I had just taken a drug.
I could see that. I totally could see that. And that's part of the fun of it, is seeing what came out of it. And it also sharpened a lot of the American writers to try to keep up with it too.
Well, yeah, I think that did, that opened up the door for a lot of American writers to tell more adult stories as well. There just seemed to be a wave of that. And like, I think we all have our favorites and everything like that. I really adored Alan Moore, and the time period that we're talking about is when he was doing League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which I think is one of my favorite all-time books. It just was an amazing, I mean, that was a take on superheroes, and it's slightly different, but very unique.
Oh, sure, because he also had his Watchmen also.
But they were very, yeah, but he had done that like a little earlier. And I think, yeah, one of these days I'd love to talk about, and we've already talked about Watchmen in detail in a book club, but League of Extraordinary Gentlemen would be really cool too. And that looks like that's wrapping up its final volume, quote unquote final volume, is coming out, I think, before the end of the year.
I think so.
So, and to be honest, I got some catching up to do because I haven't really been keeping up with it in the last couple of years.
It's a neat concept because they, you know, take literary characters and team them up. And it's just, it was a ton of fun. And don't go by the movie at all. You know, the book, the comic is just so much better.
I think also one of the things that, and you know, our British listeners are going to probably go like, I don't know what they're going to think when we're talking about this, because a lot of these names and are going to be, you know, very familiar to them. And I have to think, and certainly if anybody's out there that can, you know, sort of school me on this or correct me on this, but I have to think because of publications in Britain, like, was it 2000 AD?
Yeah, because that was Judge Dredd came out of that.
Right. But that was the mature type storytelling, literary based, which, you know, British writers are sort of known for. That issued a flood of folks coming in, ready to tell a lot of very interesting stories that were inspired by, because they grew up reading American comics.
Oh, of course. Of course. And, you know, I discovered Judge Dredd, you know, fairly early. That was probably like 83, 84.
Why is the name John Wagner stand out?
I think it was Wagner and Brian Bolan.
Okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
What we're doing. And those were just amazing things. And then to see Brian Bolan come to the U.S. and do Camelot 3000.
And Killing Joke.
Oh, God, yeah.
Killing Joke's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never actually read an issue of 2000 AD.
Okay.
And I have never read a solo issue of Judge Dredd.
Really?
Yeah. That's one thing that one of these days I wouldn't mind you know, trying that. I think the only thing I've read with Judge Dredd, and it was like a crossover with, I don't know, was there a Judge Dredd alien or Predator or something like that? Or
yes, there was. Then there was.
I think I might have done that.
You never read the Judge Dredd Batman crossovers?
Yeah, I did read that. Yes, but okay. It's been so long, I don't remember it being anything that I remembered.
Oh, those were amazing. Kelly Jones' art was just like,
wow.
Yeah,
Kelly Jones is something that, yeah, he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And that's a character that I know. I mean, I know a little bit about because of, you know, just the culture and the fact that I'm, you know, around comics. So I know about him. I know that there's a pretty decent movie starring Carl Urban. Speaking of the guy who we're going to talk about later, mm-hmm. That's out there that I need to see because I've heard good things about that as well.
Oh, it's an amazing film. And he basically fights Cersei Lannister. It's awesome.
Well, that's not too bad.
No. I definitely think you would enjoy that. And don't bother watching the Sylvester Stallone one, but I am the law.
I have seen that actually. I think I saw that in the theater back in the day.
Oh yeah. No. It was
that might have turned me off of it for a little while.
Yeah, I could see that. I truly could see that. But yeah, it was, there's some great, great storylines. Judge Dreadwise, you know, with the Wasteland stories. Then there was also, of course, the Judge Death stories, which were just spectacular. And Judge Anderson, Judge Child, there's just some really good stuff. I tried getting William into it a couple of years ago.
Mm. And I guess it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't know if I could just pick up a volume or if I need to start at the beginning or anything like that. You know, I mean, you're talking a Judge, book that's been around for like decades, right?
Yeah. Basically, Judge Dredd, you could pick up anywhere and just pick up from whatever, because he's the same character all the way through. There's no character growth. And you never see him without his helmet. Ever. So the only time I think he did is when he was in disguise or something like that. Gotcha. But you never see what his real face looks like and everything. You don't need to, because he is the law. So, yeah, there's just some great, great British stuff out there. There was this comic book that I used to read called Death's Head. And it actually crossed over into Doctor Who.
Okay. That was Marvel, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But Marvel UK
over there, right?
Yes.
Doctor Who, the Doctor Who stories that we got here in America were reprints of what was published over in Britain, right?
Correct.
Gotcha. The stuff with Tom and
Tom all the way through Sylvester, actually.
Mm.
And there are some amazing stories, Doctor Who wise, that were done for, you know, the British, you know, comics and stuff over there. And a lot of them, they were black and white when they first came out. They colorized them later on.
Gotcha.
And everything. And you had Dave Gibbons art. You had a lot of different artists doing Doctor Who. And some of the stories tie right into the comics, and that's where you got Frobisher the Penguin from, was the Doctor Who comics over there.
I have to say, through all that period, you know, I was eating a lot of that stuff up. I didn't go full tilt on Garth Ennis's stuff, I will say. So, I mean, we're going to talk about The Boys later, but I didn't read that when it came out. I never read his Preacher run. So a lot of that stuff was outside of my wheelhouse, I think. I find it interesting that you know, I'm thinking nowadays about all the young talent that's making, you know, that's in DC and Marvel, and you know, I'm kind of hard pressed to think of that many like British writers that are and artists that are around today. I mean, obviously the guys that were making them in the 80s and 90s are still around. But as far as like, you know, the new up and comers or the people that are really making like big dents in Marvel and DC, Scott Snyder, Jeff Lemire, Nick Spencer, Jason Aaron, like those are the names that pop up to me. I'm kind of wondering if there's, you know, some British talent out there. I wonder if, you know, whereas there's a whole generation that grew up reading 2000 AD, and made some interesting stories. I wonder what's inspiring or what's out there for British folks now to read and get inspired by. If it's just, is 2000 AD still published?
I don't know. That I don't know. It'd be great to find out. You know, it'd be great to see is the book still being done? For some reason, I don't think it is.
Right.
But, you know, I'd be surprised to be found out. So we'd have to see.
I know that Grant Morrison is now the editor, I believe, of Heavy Metal magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So he's brought his own unique flavor to that magazine. So that's out there. You know, I'm kind of curious to read some of that stuff. Because I from the previews I've seen of it, it does feel like a lot of the stuff that was going on in the late 80s, 90s era of comics.
No, totally understand that. It would be interesting to see, you know, I'd love, heavy metal growing up and having Grant Morrison take it over, I think is almost perfect. Because I remember when we were up in South Carolina, we were talking to a certain Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles creator who helped with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he owned it for a long time. I don't know if he said he still owned it or not. I can't remember, to be honest with you. But yeah, my memory is going. But
it's getting old. It's okay.
That's true. But a lot of great stories, a lot of great creators came out in that time period. And I think a lot of us comic fans refer to that oftentimes as the British invasion of all these great creators coming over and really making an impact on comics that we're still feeling to this day. And I don't know what happened. I don't know where the next, big thing might come from, if there will be another big thing. Cause comics is a weird, messed up industry right now. So it could use some an injection of life somewhere.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm doing what I can.
I know you are, and you're getting it out as quick as you can. So I respect that with you, Mikey. You could be the next big thing. You could be the next Garth Ennis or something like that.
I should only hope so. You know, if I could get that Amazon show out of the deal, I would be happy.
Oh, I'm sure. I am so sure. So it should be very cool to see, definitely from friends from the UK, please, let us know, what is big over there right now. Cause I remember, when I was friends over there, I used to read Captain Britain and stuff like that also.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that they were reprinting them over here. So it's interesting to see. So please let us know. You can write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I'm excited because the lull between the summer movie season and the big fall movies is finally over, and we've got two really cool movies coming out in theaters this weekend, as well as quite a few more in the next several weeks. So it's exciting to have an excuse to go back to the theater again. The first movie I want to talk about is called Ad Astra. I was really mesmerized by the trailer for this one, and it's one of those trailers where as soon as I saw it, I thought, I have to go see this movie. It's about an astronaut played by Brad Pitt who goes in search of his missing father and the key to saving planet Earth from some kind of threat or disaster. Looks like it's a thought-provoking, suspenseful sci-fi movie, which I'm always down for more of those. And I'm hoping that it'll be bold and challenging with some great visuals. At least there should be, based on what I saw in the trailer. So really looking forward to that one. And we also have a movie that I've been looking forward to for a long, long time, which is the Downton Abbey movie. Now, if you haven't watched the show yet, it's probably too late to start binging all of it before the movie this weekend. But if you haven't seen the show, it's well worth going back and catching up on. It's about a wealthy British family and their staff who live at an estate called Downton Abbey. And this series became quite the phenomenon when it was released several years ago. It seemed like one of those shows that everybody was watching and talking about. And there's so many great characters. And when the series ended, I was happy with how it ended. I thought that they did a good job wrapping up the story, but I'm so excited that they found more story to tell. There's going to be a royal visit in the movie, which will, of course, bring drama and probably a little bit of scandal, because it just wouldn't be Downton Abbey without drama and scandal. I'm really looking forward to seeing all these characters again, and hopefully it'll be a great trip back to Downton for all the fans. On DVD this week, we have what will probably be the final standalone X-Men film now that the characters have moved to the MCU, which was X-Men Dark Phoenix, which came out in theaters this summer and is now arriving on DVD. This movie didn't get really great buzz when it came out, and it didn't make a lot at the box office and received a lot of bad press as being a flop. Now, to be fair, it is a messy movie, but I actually liked it more than I was expecting to, and I think it's still worth a watch, especially if you're a fan of the X-Men movies, and in particular, these X-Men reboot films with some of the younger versions of the characters. And it is a shame that it didn't do better at the theaters. I would have liked to see Fox's X-Men series go out in a little bit of a stronger note. But we'll see what happens when they're folded into the MCU. And that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
The PWR Spot Show Podcast is a weekly wrestling podcast on the ESONetwork.com. We only talk about the real stuff, you know, Hulk Hogan and pile drivers. You can find us on Podbean and iTunes every Monday. You can also follow us on Twitter at PWR Spot Show and go to pwrspotshow.xyz.
Hey everyone, welcome to Earth Station 1, and we are back with the Geek Seek segment, and this week we got a new victim. Let's welcome Matthew Malis to the show. Welcome, sir.
Hello, hello. I just pulled into the station. It has been a great trip so far.
Well, howdy, and I'm glad the docking procedure went well, I assume?
Yeah, the pressurization, all the bulkheads held. I don't think there's going to be a leak this time.
This time, all right. Well, we'll see what we can do to get that repaired for you while you wait.
Yes, but in our one-stop shop here at Earth Station 1.
In the meantime, for those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Matthew Malis, and I am the basically producer and main host of a RPG podcast called Polyhedron, where we discuss the culture and sort of methodologies of role-playing. It goes beyond like just D&D or Vampire or any one game and talks about everything. So we've been doing that for about 3 years now.
Okay, so you've been podcasting for 3 years on that. Okay. How long have you been sort of interested in RPGs?
RPGs? Oh, since I was a teenager. Yeah. I'm 37 now, and I started when I was a 16-year-old.
Gotcha. So that is that something that you fell into right away?
Yeah, pretty much. Because, back in the day, unlike some of the younger, probably, folks that have gotten into role-playing games, nerds and geeks didn't rule the world. D&D and role-playing, apologize, wasn't in the mainstream culture. And I didn't have a lot of friends. And so go to your local gaming store, you meet a couple people in the back room and they're rolling dice and they're looking at these sheets of paper and they're talking in funny voices and trying to get something done. And I've kind of found my thing. Well, I think it was Shadowrun second edition that I kind of like immediately glommed onto.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the RPG side of things. Certainly there was D&D around when I was younger, but unfortunately I didn't have anybody to play with. So that was something I just never got into.
Yep.
I understand. I mean, it's amazing. It's kind of like vinyl in the fact that it's like really like coming back in a big way. And I don't know if we can credit Stranger Things for that a little bit. Or if it's just there's something that people are responding to, just like vinyl, that they're sort of anti-digital, you know?
Well, I could go into a little tirade if you want me to about that.
Well, you know, for the interest of time, you know, if you could summarize it.
Summarize, it's actually a combination of things. It's superheroes and geek culture becoming accepted through movies was the main thing. And then a lot of success was owed to Penny Arcade and Critical Role becoming sort of streaming became a main thing. People could see now you didn't have a lot of people helping you role play when you were probably younger playing D&D. Like you said, you didn't have somebody to play with. Now people who are more isolated like that but have the internet can go and look on and go, oh, that's a role-playing game. That's what it's kind of supposed to be. I can do that. And it just builds from there. It's sort of a way of visually teaching you how to role play in a certain way. And that sort of gets more people interested. And that's what's kind of created this D&D and overall role playing expansion right now.
I just think it's really cool. I mean, it's sort of, yeah, with everything seemingly getting more and more digitized, mm-hmm. it seems like RPGs are kind of like, have drawn the line in the sand, have said like, nope, this is something that, we can continue as is, and that's getting even more and more of a following, which is great.
Oh yeah, part of it also is, and my working hypothesis is, it's unlike MMOs, which are really big, like WoW and EverQuest and all this stuff.
Sure,
there's a lot of social interaction, but it's not face to face. It's not in person. Role playing games are an excuse, kind of like board games, to get your friends together and pal around and do some focus on something. That's what it's a form of social networking that we as gamers and as friends can do to sort of fulfill that need.
Gotcha. Well, very cool. Well, in addition to RPGs, do you have a geek fandom specialty in anything else?
Oh, wow. That takes up most of my life. So
we got the time.
Movies. I love movies. I've always adored movies, all kinds of movies. I'd go to like 11 o'clock shows at night in the theater all by myself. I'll watch damn near anything. I think movies are big thing. I'm looking forward to Joker that's coming out soon. I'm interested awesome. To see where I fall on that movie. Comic books in general, but it's been a long time since I've just collected comic books, but I do enjoy comic books in general. Like the idea I collect, I think I just started, the first volume of Wicked and the Divine. I just bought that at Dragon Con.
I got the first volume of that as well. I read the first volume of that this year. That's pretty good stuff.
It's very good. I'm probably just slowly collect the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to do it slowly because you have to take that in, because that's one of those reads that's not a quick read. Mm-hmm. Not if you want to get everything. So.
Not if you want to get all the details.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, very cool. Well, before we get to strap you down in the geek seat, because, you know, the rate of mortality on the geek seat is 50-50. So
I'm okay with those odds.
So where can people find your podcast and what you're doing online?
Well, you can find my podcast at Polyhedron Cast on Twitter. You can also go to MetaHedronStudios/Polyhedron. If you want the actual website and get the RSS feed, you can look up Polyhedron pretty much on any podcatcher of your choice, like iTunes, Stitcher, all that fun stuff. We should be there. And if you want to find me personally, I am at BioImportance on Twitter. So if you want to shoot me up, talk about nerdy RPG stuff, hit me up there. I'll happy to talk to you, talk back at you.
Awesome. Awesome. We will have links to all those in our show notes for people. So Mike, I think he's ready and primed.
Are you sure? He seems too calm.
Well, you know.
Well, you know,
I can only do so much to prepare them, dude.
Is anyone truly prepared?
No.
No, not really. You know, we still have people in the back room still crying from over being in the So, you know, it's cool. It's funny because you see people at Dragon Con who've actually been in the geek seat. Oh, you still have the scars? You still have the scars? And you have the So it's pretty awesome, man.
So, all right. Let's see how I do.
Okay, Matthew, your first question in the geek seat. What was your favorite geek out moment?
Favorite geek out moment? Oh, crap. I would have to say that my favorite geek out moment was... crap. Pressure.
I could have the Jeopardy theme playing or something.
Yeah. I would say my favorite geek out moment, because I've had a lot of them, and it's hard to differentiate for me the difference between like...
Oh, there's your
geek out moment like day to day versus a geek out like meeting a celebrity or something like that, right?
Right, of course.
And this is not me snarling, I promise. No. I think my favorite geek out moment would have to be... I have a good story. This is a good geek out moment. I was at Dragon Con many years ago, and it was late night partying like you do when you're younger.
Of course.
I was in an elevator in the Marriott, and I was visiting some friends. Like, I was coming down from a room party. And I was like, all right. And the doors were slowly closing. And then these two people came up and were like, hold the door. And we couldn't do it. And we're like, they were like, we're looking for some liquor. We're looking for some beer. Who wants to party? And we're like, oh yeah. And then the doors closed. And it was literally 2 seconds after the doors closed that I realized who those two people were.
Who was it?
Jason Momoa.
Oh,
and no it was, way. The girl from, I forgot her name. The, chick who played Tank Girl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is those two. Like, that was like, oh no, I totally would love to party with you guys, but I didn't know who they were. Like, until it was too late.
Wow. Either that or they were some really amazing cosplayers.
No, those legit were them.
Oh, really?
I promise you that was them.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was. That was definitely a geek out moment because I was like, no, just like Anakin Skywalker in the end of the prequels, just screaming because I was like, I was ready to do this, but nope. Oh,
that is funny.
That's a geek out moment.
So that might actually lead into your next question then. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Okay, so this is my most disappointing. It's a little bit of a personal one, but it's not too bad. So back in the day of college, I went to Kennesaw State in Georgia. I was a big role player, but this was like my freshman year. And as you are in your 20s, you're kind of full of yourself. And I was reading through the Exalted book. Exalted is a very, it was a White Wolf property. It's super high action fantasy anime style game.
Right.
And I'm talking and I'm arguing with a friend of mine. And we're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And this guy comes up and starts listening, talking to me. And I start arguing. And then he butts in and I start arguing with him. And I'm not believing him. And then he goes off. I don't know who this guy is. Turns out later that was Michael Goodwin, one of the lead writers on Exalted. He was one of the main guys and continued to be one of the main guys in Exalted for many years after that. And I basically just told him off and told him the term was author's intent. Like, that wasn't the author's intent. And I'm literally shouting that at the author who's disagreeing with me.
Oh, geez. Oh man.
It turns out he ends up being one of my best friends and my best man at my wedding. So,
okay. So you made up for it, dude.
Yeah. But that was my worst geek out moment of just like full inflated head, just not understanding who this was and what and how full of myself I was.
Oh, sure. No, it totally makes sense. What geeks you out the most?
What geeks me out the most?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about talking about anything role playing related, just gotcha. Straight up. Like, and now I will go on a good movie rant. Like, if you talk to me about a movie that everyone's like, this was a good movie, and it clearly wasn't.
Right.
I'm going to probably pop my top.
Okay. So.
Unless you got some good arguments.
We'll have to see how it goes later on tonight, then. That should be pretty awesome. What turns your geek off?
This is as I've gotten older, this is what's done it, is like anyone who's like, even though I do it occasionally, is somebody just like going, well, you're stupid and dumb for liking that. I can disagree with why you don't like a thing, but I'll never say you're like straight up a bad person for thinking that.
Oh, sure. No, totally. It makes sense.
I don't like that. It's everyone's here to have fun. I literally sign off my podcast with go where your fun is. So mm-hmm. If your fun is in bad 80s action flicks, okay, man, that's your thing. Cool. I can get on board, but.
Well, that's one of the awesome things about geekdom. There's no two geekdoms that are the same and no two geeks that are the same. Same thing with Dragon Con. It's like no two people have the same experience.
Oh yeah.
Which is really awesome.
Well, I love Dragon Con because it's by the fans for the fans.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what we always like hearing. And that's one of the great things about it. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
What, a fictional character?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I think the one that pops into my head, this is literally at the top of my head, I think Doctor Strange would be very interesting to talk to.
That's really interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, because he's a doctor, so he's got all this education about medical science and modern science. Plus, he's neck deep in mysticism, in the occult. So he marries these weird two dichotomies, and I would love to talk to him about how do you circle that square, as it were.
Sure. No, that totally makes sense. So are you a comic fan from Doctor Strange or mostly from the movies?
Mostly from the movies. I didn't really know. I knew he existed. I knew Doctor Strange was a thing, but I never got into his comic books until the movie because Benedict Cumberbatch did a great job as the character. And I kind of fell in love with the writing of C. Robert Cargill, the guy who was one of the writers on Doctor Strange, and I listened to all his podcasts, and he is a fantastic nerd to listen to.
Sure.
He's got some great ideas. He's very creative, and I just love listening to him. So I kind of just fell into Doctor Strange because of him.
No, totally makes sense. Let's look at the flip side of that, though. What fictional character would you not like to meet?
Oh, Jesus. There's, like, too many to count. Fictional character would not like to meet. No. Oh, my. Oh, yeah. Since we're going to talk about this later, I would want to meet Homelander.
Oh, no. Yeah, I could understand that one.
Zero.
You're actually the first person to ever bring that one up. That's pretty awesome. Ooh. So that's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah, he's... Oh, we'll talk about that. I don't want to get...
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Oh, yeah. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Oh, man. Well, I'm always a fan of the Superman pose.
Of course. The
hands on your hips, chest out motion.
Oh, yeah.
Around
cons all the time. So it's,
yeah. Oh, yeah. But also, like, because actually scientifically been proven, if you do that position... before you like go on stage or you're nervous to do something, you will feel more confident about doing it. Like, it is a ingrained cultural thing that if you get in that position for a few minutes, you will feel more confident.
I do that every time I walk into a con. I am with my people.
Dude, that's why you go to con, man. You surround yourself just with an ocean of humanity that's all pretty much like you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way I felt the first time I went into Dragon Con. It was like, I found my people, you know. Type yeah.
Thing. I've been going since, I think I remember it was like 97, 98.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So this is, I'm getting close to my 25 years of Dragon Con.
Wow. Hey, Mikey, you have someone who almost as long as you'd have. I think you almost. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Oh, I'm actually actively working on it. I want to be a full-time RPG writer.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah,
that is really awesome.
Yeah, I've got my own company. It's Metahedron Studios. I'm slowly working on my first flagship game that I'm going to publish because I have a full 9-to-5, normal 9-to-5 job. And so that eats up a lot of time and energy doing that. So I don't have a lot of time to, and I do podcasting and a lot of other stuff. So my life gets consumed. So I'm slowly trying to become that.
Oh, yeah. It's like podcasting. That just doesn't take 5-10 minutes of a day.
No. Especially if you're the editor.
Oh, God, yes. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Oh, geek occupation that I would not want to do. That's hard because all of them are kind of cool in their own weird way.
Okay.
Probably like an editor because, A, I'm not very good at it, but like just the workload that would take.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be a thing. Oh, actually, I know which one. I'm sorry. A video editor.
Ooh.
As challenging as that would be, that would also be nerve-wracking.
Oh, God, yeah. It's hard enough doing audio editing.
Yeah, I've done video editing. I can do it. I know how to do it.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just the amount of time, energy, and nuance that goes into it to get a really good product. You've got to do a lot of it and got to practice a lot to get it, like, to get your flow down just right.
Nope, totally makes sense to me. All right, are you ready for your final question, Matthew?
Yes, sir.
All right. This is for all the marbles, so remember this. What is your ultimate geek fantasy? And remember, we are a PG family.
Yeah, I know. No, my ultimate geek fantasy would probably be ultimate nerd like geek fantasy would probably be a custom house with all the cool... Me and my wife have talked about this because she's a nerd too. Like a house with like trick doors, like hidden doors and trapways that lead to like libraries and other little nooks and crannies in the house that all like have all of our nerd stuff in it.
Oh yeah. I definitely would want a house that has the Shakespeare statue that the head looks off and you turn the knob and
you pull a book off and it lifts and it moves to the side. And there's your entire geek dungeon just mm-hmm. there.
Oh so yeah.
You're got everything in there that you would ever want. And then some, the full like Caesar table, all of it.
When we all make it big as podcasters, we'll build this place. Exactly. Well, Matthew, got some great news for you, my friend.
Good.
You have made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations.
Ooh. Yeah. I started off a little rough. I didn't know what I was doing, but
I know,
I got him in the end.
You did. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $9.86.
Can we make it $10? Can we get a nice even $10?
We've dropped, sadly. Sigh.
Damn it.
Hey, it is. The market will bear what it bears. Well, very cool. Well, it's been great having you. And, of course, you know, we're finding out a little bit more about you now. And then, of course, for the main topic, we'll get all into the boys. But once again, where can people find you online and check you out?
All right. If you want to find out more about my podcast, go to Polyhedron at PolyhedronCast on Twitter or Metahedron Studios/Polyhedron. Look us up at Polyhedron on any of your podcatchers of choice. If you want to look up me, I'm at BioImportance on Twitter.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks so much.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a minute with the boys.
Hi, everybody. Michelle here with the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. And unfortunately, we are again saying goodbye to someone. Just about 3 weeks after his announcement that he had stage 4 esophageal cancer, Eddie Money passed away last Friday at the age of 70. The cause was listed actually as complications from the heart valve surgery, heart valve replacement surgery that he had earlier this year. The cancer diagnosis came about a year ago, and the surgery was in the interim. Some years ago, he kicked a fentanyl addiction, so he had a lot of health problems, but he was a tough guy and known for his big heart and a huge sense of humor. All the tributes coming in around the internet from people that worked with him all talked about how people loved him because he was so funny. What a lot of people didn't know, wasn't talked about a lot, was his activism on behalf of musicians and songwriters. He worked with Congress on laws to protect copyright and performance rights for musicians. He had so many hits, Two Tickets to Paradise, Baby Hold On, Shaken, Think I'm in Love. If you go to YouTube and look up the video for Think I'm in Love, he usually did performance videos. He didn't do a lot of acting ones, and there's a reason for that. This one shot in black and white, and it's got him cast as a vampire in a haunted castle, complete with this big cape at the top of a stair. It's too funny. It's too funny. You'll just lol. And I don't think he'd be offended that if you lolled. He probably would too. And of course he had the song, Take Me Home Tonight with Ronnie Spector. It was a great big comeback hit for the both of them. And she had a really sweet thing to say about him on her Instagram account. She said, working in the studio with Eddie was way different from any other sessions I've been involved in. He had a crazy, great sense of humor and was a real character with the kind of positive vibe that we don't see today, but we sure could use more of. And that is so true. So go out there today, take your positive vibe with you everywhere, and hum a little Eddie Money song while you do it, because I know you'll have the earworm in your head. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. The next blog entry on iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, we're going to predict this year's ballot for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's that time again. So until then, we will catch you next time.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With 4 tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
People love superheroes. They swoop out of the sky and save the day. People love that cozy feeling that superheroes give them.
Gets up. Robin!
My deepest condolences to Robin's family. She just stepped in the middle of the street.
She was a half step off the f***ing curb.
Now, come on, Huey, just don't get upset.
Soups lose hundreds of people each year. It's a collateral damage.
It's fucking diabolical.
They're all like that? All of them.
Yeah, pardon my French. I got the boys together. Join us.
To do what?
Spank the bastards. For Robin.
And then... Lacing the shoes, I'm on the
move. I got so much to prove. It's suicide to go after the soups.
We can use help stopping them.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, are you okay?
I'm fine. I'm just having a bad day. It's a work thing. I'm supposed to be this hero idol symbol, but I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
She could help us.
She's a soup, just like the rest of them.
You're wrong about her.
Just remember who your friends and who your enemies are.
They just declared war.
You can't do this. You don't have the fight. You never have.
This kid is full of surprises.
Well, well, well.
It's not what it looks like.
I thought we had an understanding.
I know you're trying to be tough, but we're superheroes.
Who are you?
Welcome back to the main topic. This time we are going to look at Garth Ennis's The Boys, which just premiered last month on Amazon.com, or Amazon Prime, as some people like to call it. Take it away, Mikey.
Yes, Amazon Prime brought us The Boys. I don't think anybody expected that this comic series from, 2006. Man, that's like 13 years ago.
Let me get my walker out or something.
I know, right? Would be brought to us in living color, really, by Amazon Prime. So, yes, we want to talk all about it. We've got, of course, Matthew is still here. He's still strapped to the chair.
Belts and everything.
And we've also got John Strangway is here. John, it's been so long since you've been on the station, man.
It has, at least years now. What?
And as it hasn't been years, has it?
Yeah, it has, actually.
Wow. See, that's another thing. It doesn't
never
feel
right.
That
they never call.
So, but then again, that's because I just saw him a few times in passing at Dragon Con. Are you recovered?
Mostly. But yeah, no, I kept seeing you up in the artist alley where the track I worked for. So, mm-hmm. Yep.
Good year?
It was. I had a really good year, actually. Got to meet a lot of people. Got to meet Carl Urban. So,
speaking
of that. Yeah, two of the stars of The Boys were there. And I think they must be filming it the second season now because Carl sort of looked in character. I mean, I noticed in the photos that he was taking with people, he was wearing the Hawaiian shirt, but also like that's a real beard he's sporting and his hair is out and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he really looked like
they actually took time off from season two production for have them to go to, I think, Gen Con and for them to have time to come down and do Dragon Con. So yeah, they stopped production for a few days to allow those actors to leave and go do stuff to promote the show.
Since we're talking about how old we are, I will say that I first met Carl Urban way back at a Dragon Con, which I don't even remember the year, but he was here for Xena.
Wow.
Back in the 90s.
Yep. And I had his autograph. He was with Alexander Tidings, who played Aphrodite on that show. And of course, Carl played a dual role. He played Cupid as well as Caesar.
Oh, I totally forgot he played Cupid. Holy crap. This is coming back to me now.
So, blonde hair.
And who would have known, right? I had no idea. But cool guy. And he seems just as cool now as he was back then. I wanted to know, let's start with what our thoughts were going in. What did you know? What did you expect? And overall, what did you think of it when season one was over? And Matthew, we'll start with you. Did you read the comic or what were your thoughts going into this?
So I knew it was a comic, but I never read the comic. It was a couple of years ago that a buddy of mine who owns a comic book store was like, the Boys is a thing. People are picking up the Boys more and more. It's becoming, it's sort of having a resurgence. And then I'm like, okay, the Boys, fine, whatever. I heard it was very, like, very edgy, very, very graphic, but I wasn't super into that. I was just trying to, I was doing other things. And then they're like, yeah, the Amazon's making a show. I was like, okay. And I, then the, like that weekend that the Boys came out, I was like, okay, I'll sit down and watch it. The weekend goes by and I'm done with the show. It's so good. It's so well put together because the dialogue is smart. The story is interesting. And it's really the actors that sell every single one. Like it's the story is good, but and the world building is fun, but man, those, the Huey is interesting. Homelander is psychotic. All the characters shine. All of them are good guys and bad guys. Like they all have their flaws. Some flaws are bigger than others. But man, oh man, is just stellar performances. And that's what really carries it through. It was 8 episodes. Is that correct? Yeah, right,
correct.
It was 8 episodes. And that's what I just got.
1 hour episodes, right? Cause it's 80 yeah. hours. Right. Yeah. So yeah. And I'm like you, I took care of it in 2 days. Yeah. So, John, what about you? What was your history with the Boys going in?
Probably, I want to say back in 2008 is when I started reading the comics because I think the first 2 trades had been out and I got hooked. So I had read Preacher when Garth Ennis did that and I was stoked. And I started reading this and it is so messed up, so dark. And you just get hooked into it. As disturbing as it is, you just have to like plow through it because – you know, it takes the parallels of both DC and Marvel superheroes and just makes mockeries of them. And that's what I liked about the flip on it. It was, you know, it's like, where do superheroes have to be morally abiding? And they're not in this story.
Not by any means. No.
No. And so, you know, it's about a 70-issue story arc with a couple side stories. Herogasm is a hilarious, like, 4-issue read where all the superheroes and supervillains leave Earth to go fight an intergalactic,
threat
villain. And they actually are just going on an island to go vacation. That's all it is. Where they are just doing drugs and all sorts of debauchery. It's yeah. So I heard about it actually about a year before it came out. My buddy was actually on a phone call working on it, and he started saying names like Homelander and Lamplighter and The Deep. And I looked at him, and I'm just like, I'm like, are you talking about the Boys? And he looked at me, and he's still on the phone, and he's just like, how, what? And so he hangs up. He's like, how did you know what I'm working on? I'm like, I read the comic. I was like, I know these character names. So I got super excited. And I was like, you know, I know Seth Rogen was really like into pushing Garth Ennis after he got Preacher on AMC. And I was just like, I don't know who's AMC can't do the Boys. There's no way it can be on AMC. I don't care how dark Breaking Bad was and Walking Dead. I'm like, the Boys just pushed it way past that limit. So when I saw that it was on Amazon, I was like, okay, they can get away with way more. But the show is. It's mostly following the comic. There is some slight twist, but that's fine because I don't want to just watch everything I've read. I want to see something new. But everybody they cast did a great job. And a little Easter egg for those who haven't read the comics, the character Huey in the comics is named Wee Huey. He's actually Scottish, and Garth Ennis based him on Simon Pegg. If you look at the comic character, he's meant to look like Simon Pegg. And Simon Pegg actually wrote the introduction to the beginning of the comic. And so when they cast Simon Pegg as the father of Huey, I thought that was a nice little nod and tribute, you know, back to the comic. So, I blew through the 8 episodes. Yeah. And when I met Carl Urban, he asked, I told him I'd read the comics. He's like, are we doing, you know, a good job? We want to make sure the fans are. I said, no, you guys are doing an amazing job. Keep it up. I'm looking forward to the second season. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Mike, what about you?
For me, I had heard about the Boys, but for some reason I just didn't pick it up. And I had heard that about a year ago that they had decided to, Amazon was going to be creating the series of it with Carl Urban. And I was like, okay, I'm going to check it out. And I started reading up what The Boys was about and everything. And I had picked up at Dragon Con this year, the trade and the omnibus of the first few issues, and started reading it at the con. And I was just like, oh crap, this is good and everything. Cause I had Judy actually watched the series before I did. She and her sister watched it while Judy was at the hospital. And she said, you got to watch this. You got to watch The Boys. She said, I'll watch it a second time so I can watch it with you. And that's what we did. And I did some research on it, and it was just reading what, you know, Garth originally had planned. He originally planned that he wanted to do this in the DC universe.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, he was, my understanding is, and for those people who don't know, and obviously you can look this stuff up online and all that, but don't claim to be experts, but I do recall that in that DC put out the first few issues under the Wildstorm banner at the time. And even with that banner on it, they were really uncomfortable with what Garth was doing. What Garth and Derek Robinson, we should mention too, was the artist on all that. What they were doing. So they finally said, you know, we just can't have you do this. And because he had kind of pushed it a little bit, obviously, with his run on Preacher and then with Hitman, which was in the DCU. So this was a kind of an extension of that. But without, you know, once he got to Dynamite, he could just, I mean, the cage was blown open. He could do whatever he wanted. And of course he did. So
literally,
I can't say that I've always been a huge Garth Ennis fan. But I do like a lot of his work. I really love his World War II stuff. If you ever see anything that like, he writes tons of war stories. He's really great at that. And for me personally, I mean, I've seen a lot of this, of the whole, like, you know, alternate or mature or whatever you want to call it, spin on heroes. You know, it's like, I think the earliest incarnation was obviously, and the most famous probably is Watchmen. You know, down the line, we've had like Squadron Supreme. We've had Mark Miller with Wanted Universe. We've had Warren Ellis has done stuff with Planetary, you know, that kind of thing. The Mystery Men movie was kind of similar, you know, like that kind of tone. You can even argue that the Tick has a little bit of that going on. And recently, definitely, and of course, Irredeemable by Mark Waid for Boom. When Boom Comics first started. So I've read a lot of these, like, what would happen if the Justice League was a bunch of a-holes, you know, that kind of thing. And so, you know, I knew that The Boys was there, and I knew that, you know, Garth was going to push it to the limit. And I don't know if I was necessarily like on board with watching or reading that at the time. But you know, so many people were talking about the series, and I was interested, and I'm a big fan of Carl Urban in particular. So I said, I'll give this a whirl. And it is a fun series. It's really fun. I find it interesting that, you know, with a lot of folks talking about superhero fatigue, maybe a little bit, that, this show comes out and sort of spins people who are not familiar with all that stuff that I just mentioned. Like, this show must be blowing their minds, right? So a little bit about that, like, on that text, like, as far as a different spin on the Justice League in particular, because obviously, you know, I know that all superheroes kind of get targeted here, but, you know, you've got your obvious Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman sort of tropes here, right?
Oh, very much so. You had, you know, basically the different versions of characters that we know and love. And, you know, you had, you know, A-Train, of course, was the Flash.
Sure.
and you know, you had the Wonder Woman, you had the Batman, you had Aquaman, and it was, you know, it was just interesting, the portrayal of them, because you know, you always used to hold the Justice League or the Avengers up to a higher level than even other heroes, and that's what the Seven are supposed to be. And sure. And you get to see, I
mean, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, but you get to see it from a brand new hero who's being initiated into the Seven.
Yeah, it's because Lamplighter, who she's replacing, is the Green Lantern analog,
right?
And she's sort of becoming the Green Lantern replacement, but she's the POV character. She's the character who's like, we get introduced to the world of Supes through her, while we get the world of mortal people, normal people, through Huey, and the world's colliding together.
Oh, exactly. And it's just interesting that you see it. And I love, you know, I love the different relationships you see, and especially with Huey, you know, being innocent and being thrown into it. He worshiped the heroes before what happened to Robin. And,
oh yeah.
And, you know, he had posters up on his walls. He was, you know, a superhero fanboy. And he was like you or I, you know, going to the cons and, you know, and thinking that the superheroes were real. And right. it was awesome to see it through his eyes. And man, her death was just, her death, I think, was even more gruesome on the show than it was in the comic book.
I was going to ask you guys if it's in the comic as well, because I do find it, and I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but the fact that this starts with the death of Robin, I thought, okay, is that something that, you know, is a reference to, obviously, you know, Jason Todd's death and the death of the corny sidekick?
Until you said that, I didn't think it. And then I was like, oh, her name is Robin? Oh, no.
Exactly.
Why'd you say that name?
I mean, I don't, like, is... Like, and John, maybe you can answer this as well. Speak to this since you're a lot more familiar with it. Is the boys, as the comic anyway, just Garth taking the piss out of heroes, or is he saying something like, obviously I don't think it's as drawn out and substantial as maybe Alan Moore's trying to be with Watchmen, but, or is he trying to comment on that kind of thing?
No, I definitely think he is, because some of the parallels from the show and TV, and I don't know if, I want to give away spoilers or not, but...
Oh, this is a spoiler podcast.
It's a spoiler. Okay. It's a spoiler.
Okay, thank you. Thank
at
you.
Least for the show. All at right. least for the so, show.
For instance, comic too.
In the show, when they go to stop the airline that's been hijacked, that's a reference to actually, in the comic, they sent the Supes to stop the planes on 9/11.
Mm.
And they failed horribly. And instead of the plane crashing into the Twin Towers, the plane actually crashed into the Brooklyn Bridge. So in the comics, the Brooklyn Bridge is no more and is now, like, the remains are a memorial. So they, you know, they've tried this where the superheroes are trying to, they're trying to get them into national defense, into the American government.
Right.
And, you know, basically the rest of the businesses that make weapons and military tech have backed everything they can into the politicians to stop the superheroes from getting in.
Right.
And so that's kind of like the beginning story arc, right? And, you know, with the parallels like the Seven, there are parallels for even Marvel characters. So you've got the G-Men, which are the X-Men. And off the bat, right after you see Robin die in the show, but same thing in the comic, a little different, but basically same thing. There's a whorehouse where all the G-Men are in there, and it's like an outside shot, and you hear screamed out from the side, change, and they all swap, and then it cuts to an inside scene where there's a bunch of prostitutes in one room doing lines of coke just to keep up with superheroes, because that's all they want to do. So it's, you know, it's showing how horribly corrupt a corporation that backs superheroes to make money off them, you know, how they can get away with all this.
Well, exactly, because but in also that's the first time they also introduce V.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Because Huey is spying on them and he says, wait a minute, that cocaine is blue. And, you know, and that's how they end the issue. And it's just like, that's how, so it's neat how they slowly just stick that in and it's just like, aha. And because they made V more of like a drug they shoot up and everything in the TV show.
It's more of a steroid. It's sort of like a super steroid, literally a super steroid in the show. And they made it more of a, just a thing to traffic. I love how they like explained how it got over the world and like got moved around without anyone noticing because they were using A-Train and others like super speedsters to do it. So no one could catch them.
Oh, and that was rough when the, what was it? The mayor of Baltimore was in the meeting with Elizabeth Shue's character in the TV show. And he brought up, oh, what about the V? And I know all about that. You wouldn't want me leaking that to the media. And then, you know, she said, oh, no, no, we can come to an agreement. And then, you know, he's on the airplane with his son, you know, the private jet. And they're like, hey, there's Homelander. And Homelander literally wipes the jet out with his laser vision.
So I'm gonna point something out that I really like about this show. Like, I want to go on a thing. So I love that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing in this show. Because you always think it's one way. Like, you in the audience, you're looking at a thing. You're like, okay, this has got to be the plot line. You know that everyone's in on the whole thing. Homelander and I forgot her name, the one who runs Vought, the main woman.
Yeah, Elizabeth Shue's character.
She, like, you think they're all in cahoots. They all are on the same page. This is all like a concentrated plan. And then as the series goes, you're like, you can't trust what you're seeing. You can't trust what people say.
Stillwell, that was it. Sorry.
What?
Elizabeth Stillwell. Stillwell was her character.
Stillwell. You don't, with through Stillwell, Homelander, and a lot of other characters, you can't trust what any character says to the other characters because they may straight up, and even some of the shots that they showed the audience, you're like, that never happened. Like, that legit never happened. It is there to fool the audience so that you, when we give you the twist later on, you didn't see it coming, but it makes perfect sense in hindsight.
Yeah, the incident in particular that I think that sparked it for me, it was similar to what Mike was talking about, was, I mean, we're told that, yeah, the Seven are kind of corrupt and they're kind of a-holes or whatever, but Homelander is the real deal. Homelander is like the guy. He like Captain America, Superman, you know, he's the Boy Scout. It's that scene where he takes down the plane where you realize that he's the worst of them all. And he just keeps getting worse and worse and worse as the series continues. And I'm going to say it right now. I got to give that guy so much props. I know he's been on other things. I guess he was on a show called Banshee that he was like one of the main characters on. But that actor in particular, I don't think I'd seen him before. And let me tell you, that guy was perfect. He was amazing as Homelander.
But I gotta give props out because Black Noir, you're great.
Oh, that's funny.
Which, read the comics, it may come to fruition.
Yeah, I wanna know more about Black Noir. I wanna see.
I don't wanna say it because I don't want you guys to
read this. Don't. No. I wanna find out for myself.
You guys, I can't wait to hear the reactions to the twists. There are so many.
But it does feel like, you know, like I was saying about some of this other things that we've seen with heroes kind of depicted in a different way. And I know in some cases, like I think Astro City was a series I enjoyed quite a bit. They try to put the heroes into realistic, real world scenarios, right? The one thing I like about The Boys is, I mean, you could sort of argue that, yeah, this is might be what it's like if we really had heroes in today's world. But in some ways, this world that's created in The Boys, at least on the show, is way more over the top and comical than almost any other Justice League book that you're going to read. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. Carl Urban in particular, the character of Billy, his accent is just like amazingly like over the top and just awesome. Like at first I thought, am I going to need subtitles for this?
I got to point out, but best character, breakout character, Frenchie. Everyone I talked to is like, Frenchie is best boy. Frenchie is best character. Like straight up.
Yeah, and hands he's another down, one where it's like, that's not like, I mean, that's, it's over the top French accent, right? I mean, it's
oh, yeah.
crazy. It's like from Hogan's Heroes, the French guy. So I
name is Mother's Milk. What?
Exactly. So I have to give them credit, but as far as other characters, but even though it's crazy, and it's not nearly as crazy as it is in the comic. And I kind of know watching this. I mean, I would imagine that anybody who's watching this, not familiar with the comic, is probably their mind's blown, but they have no idea like how much darker it could be.
Oh, and it does get,
Yeah.
You haven't seen anything yet. Season two.
Well, I mean, that's
it's
the thing.
Blow
I mean,
your
as
way.
Far as, I mean, we'll kind of get to maybe our predictions for season two. And for those who've read the comic, I know that well, I do also know that there's some stuff that happens at the end of season one that doesn't happen until the like way into the comic, right? So they're moving things ahead quite quickly in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, John?
Oh yeah, no, they kind of like pulled stuff that happens much further later on in the story, but even to the point where the difference how the boys are in the show, where Billy's trying to like bring the band back together. Where the difference being that in the comic, they're already established and they're backed by the CIA. It's not like he's trying to like get his foothold back into the CIA, what he's trying to do in the show. So it came from a different angle with that, which I like. You know,
I second that because I think it gives them the excuse to reintroduce the characters to everyone.
Right.
B, it also go, okay, there's history with everyone here. That means we all get to infer what that history is through their interactions,
mm-hmm.
which the world building in this show is so good just because they're like, we are not explaining this to you. There is no narrator. There's no scroll wall of text. There's nothing. If you want the pieces to this puzzle, pay attention.
Exactly. Even in the comic, woman is already part of the group.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I like in the TV show how they introduced her. And I like that mm-hmm. they didn't do it right away. She came in a couple episodes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they only call her, I think, woman, the girl, once. Mm-hmm. And then they give her name back.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just call her. Then they start calling her Kimiko, I think is her name.
Yeah, the comic.
And they refer to her as that from that point forward. Mm-hmm.
That's
in the comic, she's just known as the female.
The female, sorry. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
And wait till you learn what MM's initials stand for.
I can only guess. I also want to give props to, I think, as far as the heroes goes, the heroic characters on this, the one that we feel that we have the most empathy for is Annie Starlight. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think she's played excellently by Erin Moriarty. I don't think I'd ever seen her in anything either. So I thought she handled the job very well and was sympathetic and believable as a wholesome hero in a not so wholesome environment.
Oh God. And what they did in the TV show, you know, her initiation into the Seven.
Oh, why'd you have to say it like that?
Yeah.
Well,
because that was,
I know that was at least six times worse in the comic.
Well, it was the Homelander as opposed to Lamplighter. Or yeah, sorry,
I mean the deep.
Sorry, yeah, right. that and you know that to me it definitely gave a different feel with which character it was. You know, because then you, in the show you're thinking, okay, Homelander is still like decent until much later you're he's horrible.
He's a whole other kind of monster.
Right. Yeah.
Well, basically, you know, Homelander is literally Superman if he didn't have Jonathan and Martha, you know, to raise him.
Well, I mean, the show makes a point. They say there's this theory in the show that, and it's not really expounded upon, although maybe it will be in season two, because obviously with the events that happened at the end of season one, we're led to believe that if you don't have parents, this is how you turn out. Like that's kind of what the main I can't remember, I can't think of his name now, but the main doctor there that kind of took him in and experimented on it and all that.
But it was also a combination of you don't have parents and we raised you in a lab.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Homelander is protogenesis, like prototype one, is like you were the first control that we had to do and was successful on. So, but we were so hands off on you because we were so scared and we were just studying you that we basically built a sociopath. That's my take on that, like on the Homelander's disposition.
Sure. I mean, obviously he has no moral compass.
Oh God, no.
Right. And he's looking for a mother.
The environment, in a lot of weird ways.
Him staring at the wall or through the wall, watching, you know, basically Elizabeth Shue's character breastfeed.
Yeah.
And the looks he was giving that baby, he wanted to use the heat vision on that.
I knew the baby was dead at some point. Like the baby was going to die at some point. So, although we assume that the baby's dead at the end of the season, but we don't know that for sure.
Knowing Homelander, yes, the baby is dead.
Or the baby's a soup.
Well,
in a lip.
We don't
know.
We don't know anything about where the baby came from, who the baby's father is, or anything like that.
Yep.
So obviously that could be something if they want to resolve that in the next season. But I also, it does seem to, there does seem to be a path that the show takes regarding the relationship between superheroes and spirituality. And when you've got these characters that are like gods, but then you've also got religious people out there who are, you know, the whole Capes for Christ campaign, you know, like that's something that I will say I give them credit for, because I have not seen that played out before, much like it is in The Boys. And I did not expect it to do that, making some commentaries on that sort of relationship.
So I'm going to interject a little RPG history here.
Oh.
I'm a little more familiar with that concept because back in the early, very early aughts, we're talking 99, 2000, White Wolf produced a game called Aberrant, and it was their take on modern day superheroes, what happens if they existed in the real world. And the idea was they would become like celebrities, aka a la The Boys. But they also took it direction of what would humanity start worshiping them as like gods, and would they start taking on personas like gods. And it was very interesting watching The Boys that do, especially from a Judeo-Christian point of view, of like these figures for Christ, as it were, these favored sons and daughters of God coming through and like helping lift up Christianity in America, because we learn later that only super soups until the very end are only in America.
Is the religious angle in the comics as well, John?
Not that I remember. I can see why it might be pertinent in today's society, where they might be using that to, you know, show sway in the polls with, like, say, on the political scheme.
Exactly. But
I didn't see it I don't remember really seeing that in the comics. It was more of the agenda of Vought to get Stoops into national defense, and trying to perfect, like, you know, the whole Homelander being grown. So in the comics, the backstory of Compound V, it was created during World War II to essentially create a super soldier, but it's not perfected. So
yeah.
You get a 50-50 of whether you're going to get a superhero or the person could explode. So they just start injecting it into whoever. And that's kind of where, like, now Vought has taken it, you know, into present day, where they've been really testing it to get. So like the Seven are the upper echelon of their superheroes. And then you have the smaller groups where, yeah, they've got superpowers, but they're not that great. And that's why, you know, when Popclaw is talking to A-Train in the show, and she's like, oh, you know, you're not good enough to be seen in out in public with, you know, a second rate superhero, because they have developed that class system almost.
Right. Kind of like a Teen Titans or New Warriors type thing.
Oh, well, yeah.
No, I mean, you've got the seven, and then you've got, like, you know, heroes that are, you know, assigned to, you know, Paducah, Kentucky, right? Like, that's where they're patrolling, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's where Starlight came from. Yeah. And it, the one thing with the comic is Starlight is a lot even more innocent than she was in the comics, than she was in the
TV. I got a serious save the cheerleader vibe from her from Heroes. Like, I just like, I don't know if that's the vibe they were going for, but
the maturity of her character is fantastic. Like, just later on, just like her presence later in later episodes, especially when she decides to go up against A-Train, is great. I absolutely love that entire, like, they didn't give us a lot of like soup on soup action, but when they did, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I loved when she, you know, stood up to the Aquaman character, you know, and, you know, hey, you're nothing in this group. You're one of the jokes of this group, you know, type thing.
Yep.
And I just love that. And oh my God, that scene with him and the dolphin. Oh my God. That was just so wrong in so many ways.
So good.
I know.
So great.
In slow motion, the dolphin going through the windshield out and then getting run over by the truck. I was just like, oh no. You know,
that was one thing after another thing after another thing.
So, I mean, boy, talk about tapping into silent movie Keystone Cops, you know, stuff. Even Monty Python was doing stuff like that. I mean, this show pulls out all the tricks, right? Is there anything about the show that you feel like maybe is a misfire, something that you're not digging?
Ooh.
And John, in particular, is there anything about the show that you kind of miss from the comics?
I miss Billy's dog, Terror. they show it in a back sequence, but that was it. You saw it in, like, his, you know, memory of him and his wife. You saw the bulldog, but his dog in the comic is this ridiculous comic relief. It's so stupid, but it's pretty funny. I mean, it's very minor. That's, I guess I want to say a nice compliment to the show. The show has done a great job of making a lot of nods to the comic, even though it has changed some things slightly, like with Huey being now American instead of Scottish, they did change out one of the seven. The seven that goes invisible or translucent.
Translucent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's not in the comic. It's a different character that's basically a parody of
Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, Martian Manhunter, yeah.
The manner in which they finally figure out a way to dispose of translucent is warped.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
he is awesome. That Frenchie is best boy.
That's a nod to when Huey has to deal with a different superhero in the comic. That's from another group, which it just goes all wrong. I think that was the one thing I wish that would have been done in the show. So in the comic, in order for the boys to kind of go toe to toe with Supes, the CIA does inject them with Compound V so that they can have a little bit of super strength so they can hold their own. And that's about it. But other than that, everybody else kind of has military background, mm-hmm. like Billy, MM, the, you know, Frenchie. So, you know, Huey's the odd man out where he just comes out of nowhere and they put him on intelligence basically.
Mm-hmm. But he's the scene where he gets spiked with the V, though, you know, out of nowhere. It was just like, oh, that was just cold.
Yeah, that's where you start to really learn that Billy is out for his own agenda. Doesn't matter who gets in his way, friend mm-hmm. or foe. So there's very much parallels between him and Homelander where they're going to do what they're going to do to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly.
Like that. I did like the fact that I was really surprised that by the end of the first season, those two trains collide. I thought that was going to be saved for, you know, because prior to this, I think even airing, Amazon said that they greenlit, they were going to greenlight season two. So, which is great, because the way season one ends, I'm kind of like, you better have a season two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matthew, was there anything in this that maybe didn't work for you?
If I have one, but it's extremely minor, because I think they were nearly firing on all cylinders with this show. Like, it's really up there with one of my favorites, and I recommend it to anyone. I think I would have liked to have known that Supes were only in America earlier, like, because you didn't learn that. You sort of inferred it like in the mid, and it wasn't until like episode six that you are told straight up that it's only in America, that they don't have international Supes. Mm. And that would have like heightened the, hey, what's going on here sort of thought process to me. I would have liked to have known that a little bit earlier, but like I said, it's a very minor quibble, but it would have been like good table setting for me.
Gotcha. Mike, anything for you?
No, I thought it worked really well. Making Huey American, I think, worked, especially if you haven't seen or read the comics. I thought, you know, you wouldn't know any different. And
just like you wouldn't know, like, by watching the show, how damn tall that guy is.
He's freakishly tall.
That actor is amazingly tall. I was in the Walk of Fame and I saw him next to Carl, and I was like, oh my god, he's like leaps and bounds taller than Carl. Although in the show they're equal, if not, like, Carl must be standing on tons of apple boxes or something. When
it's just sheer presence. That's the Carl exactly. Urban you get. Just sheer presence makes everyone shorter.
Oh, but god.
Anyway, exactly. I'm sorry.
No, and it's interesting considering who his parents are too. Because I've never seen Jack Quaid in anything else before. And it's interesting that his parents are Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid.
Mm. Oh, wow. I didn't know that. He's got some
pedigree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's got some serious pedigree. Yeah.
And it's funny. Judy said, considering who his parents are, he's kind of not attractive.
Oh, he's a cute boy. He's a sweet boy. He's a sweet boy.
But I loved, you know, you literally, because he was, like I started saying earlier, you saw his innocence go down the tubes throughout the show. And he matured, he got corrupted by Billy, and it was just, you know, it was just interesting as he got deeper and deeper into the world, he became more accepting of it. Until he was willing to go up against A-Train himself.
I like the fact that it is a, you know, as he goes down this quote unquote dark path, on the one hand, yes, you could argue that he's going through a dark, you know, he's going to the dark side. But on the other hand, before that, he was a guy who wouldn't take chances, who didn't really have what it takes to get the job done, who didn't really have a lot of passion for things.
Oh, he lived with his frippin' father still.
So he's sort of like, he's becoming a better person, actually, in a weird sort of way. And yes, even though he's going through this dark path, he does have the cojones to be like, no, no, we're not doing this. We're not doing this way. We're going to do it this way. And I think that his character arc is really exceptional.
And I do feel, though, sorry to interrupt, Mikey.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. I'm just excited.
I know. I did feel like his feelings, though, for Starlight were legit. Totally. Sure.
Yeah. No, absolutely. 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 Yes.
Actually,
because he started that before he even knew who she was. So that, I mean, that was a great sequence of events.
Oh my God. And when they went to the superhero AA meeting, oh, that was awesome. And that poor copywriter who had his dick frozen off with the superhero, it was just like,
and he works for them too.
I know. That's
the
worst.
The only thing that didn't work for me was the character of the Deep. I'm sort of overseeing Aquaman jokes characters. And so there was nothing new here for me for that. And it seemed like later on in the season that we were sort of meant to feel sorry for him, which I just was refusing to do. So
no.
I don't know what they were really going for with that. You know, if you're going to make him a jerk, make him a jerk. And if somehow he's going to be redeemable, then we've got to see that. And they were trying to push that on us before I think the character was ready to go through that.
So, I thought he was going to commit suicide at the end of the season,
though. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. I mean, it seemed like every time, and I don't really mean to be mean to the actor because I think he was great, but it just seemed like every time the Deep was involved with that scene, I just kind of did not go well for me. So that was the only thing that kind of took me out of it a little bit. But I am eager for season two. And as we wrap up, I want to hear what you guys are hoping for or expect to see in season two, which do we know if they're shooting it now, is that planning to air next year? Do we know?
Mm-hmm. Probably same time, summer next year, hopefully.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, John, let's start with you. What do you, I mean, without giving away maybe some comic spoilers, is there anything that you think that we should look forward to in season two, maybe, hopefully?
I'm definitely looking forward to the Payback, which is basically the group that mimics Avengers. So you see them in the beginning of the comics, and then they take a much more integral part later on. And man, the guy who's the opposite of Thor, I'm not going to ruin it, but it's a great character.
Then I won't spoil it either, because I think I know exactly who you're talking about.
So he's interesting. That I'm definitely looking forward to, as well as bringing in some of the other groups. When we got mention of Teenage Kicks, and Popclaw was part of that, but there are others that have a more, you know, lead role in the comics. And the Deep, he got way more screen time in the show than he did in the comic, because in the comic, he's literally just a dude in a suit with the old deep sea diving helmet, like old school deep sea. That's it. He barely talks. He like opens up the portal, you know, the glass portal, and like that's about it.
Yeah, the one time in the comic I remember him talking was about the sales of their merchandise and everything. He was griping about it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Matthew, what about you? What are you looking forward to in the next season?
Besides what he just said, because I know a little bit of what's probably going to happen in season two, and it's, let's say, it's very contemporary. It has a few comments about the current political climate. But you kind of brought it up at the end, Mike. I'm interested to see where the Deep goes. I actually thought I kind of saw what they were trying to do with the Deep, and we'll see if it pays off enough in season two. Because I think by the end of it, he has hit the lowest point, and I think hopefully he has come to a revelation that he is. And oh, sorry, I didn't mean to swear. Sorry. I apologize.
Don't worry about it. I know the editor.
Yeah, he. I think if they do his that sort of arc justice, he will come to the revelation that he was a terrible person, and hopefully can take steps to make do better. Hmm. But we'll see. It's the Boys. Who knows? but it will definitely be very interesting to see the story, especially with something I can talk about, which is what is with Homelander's son and what that means for everyone else who's a Soup, because we haven't seen Soup like the natural progression of having children that are also naturally super. So we'll get to explore that idea, which is super fascinating.
Mike, what about you?
I just want to see where it goes, because with the reveal, you know, at the end, you know, with what happened, you know, basically Homelander killed, you know, the heads of the company that he was working for, and the doctor who raised him. And now basically you did get a little bit of an appearance from the guy who used to be on Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Gus Fring, Gustavo Fring.
Exactly. As he who was the one who was working up on the 85th floor. And so it was interesting if he's going to have a bigger role the next season or what they're going to do with it, because they made it a lot more about the corporation than in the comics. And so I'm going to be curious to see where these characters go, what happens, you know, will A-Train have, you know, a change of conscience because of his heart attack, you know, that whole thing. But I'm not holding my breath on that one. So I'm just very curious to see what happens with The Boys.
Yeah, and I am as well. I definitely would like to see more incarnations of other types of heroes. And we haven't yet seen, like, really the Marvel universe played out in this universe yet. So I wouldn't mind seeing some of that. So I hope that is to come. But a lot of the goals and a lot of the story arcs that were that began in this season kind of came to a head at the end. So it'll be really interesting to see how, you know, Billy responds to this new information that he has. And obviously his reason for being, although he's still probably going to be, you know, want to take down Midnighter. I said the wrong one. Homelander is going to be, is going to be put to the test as well. And to see what, obviously, with these guys, with not having powers, I think, John, to your point, with the comics, they have a equalizer. It's kind of interesting that in the show they don't. Like, it's interesting to see how these humans can like adapt and try to fight these heroes. Mm. So, but good stuff. Well, hopefully, when season two airs next season, if it indeed does, we can all resume. We'll get the boys back together to talk about the boys, right?
Yeah, man.
and I'll leave it to the audience to decide like which one of us is which. So, so thanks, guys. Appreciate it, and we will be right back with the ESO Network Con.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week this Geek Girl is talking about Beetlejuice the Musical on Broadway. There has been an influx over the years of Broadway shows based on popular movies or comics or musicians, and Beetlejuice is just that. And it's incredibly good. The music is amazing, the storyline is really fun to watch, and it has redeeming characters, funny jokes, and, you know, you really, really enjoy it. The cast is amazing, the music is really, really catchy, and I still can't get some of the songs out of my head. The show follows Lydia Dietz after her mother's passing away. She comes to a small town and finds out that her house is haunted. The storyline is super familiar, but not the same as the movie that we all know. Lydia later makes a deal with Beetlejuice and brings him out by saying his name three times and scares her father and life coach out of the house. Lydia then finds out that she could potentially see her mother again by going into the underworld, which turns out to backfire on her. The songs in this film are really, really great, and the Broadway cast did an amazing job singing them. The jokes were really, really funny, and Beetlejuice kept you laughing all during the show. The props and costumes were amazing, and I adore the sandworms that you get to see from time to time. They were so adorable and wonderful. The musical stays very true to the main gist of the movie, but to me was kind of like a combination of the movie and cartoon, while also having its own flair. I would definitely check it out, or at least pick up the soundtrack and give it a listen if you can't make it to New York to see it. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
For the week of September 20th, 2019, it's the ESO Network Con Report. Con!
Well, the first convention that we need to talk about is coming up real fast, September 27th through the 29th, and it is Monsterama. Of course, our good friend of the station, Anthony Taylor, is here to tell us all about it.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. I love how each year you have a different theme, and this year it's Little Shop of Monsterama. It's just a really one thing that makes this show so unique.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. It's a tribute to not only Little Shop of Horrors, but also to the magazine Little Shop of Horrors with the two B's and the E, which celebrates British horror. And we've got a lot of great guests that are kind of all a part of both sides of that this year. So
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's get into it. Like, so who are some of the big guests you've got this year?
Well, we've got from The Little Shop of Horror, the original Roger Corman film, Jackie Joseph, who played Audrey. And awesome. Then we've also got Jane Merrow, who starred in Hands of the Ripper from Hammer Films and also co-starred in The Lion in Winter, which is one of my favorite films of all time. We've got Ian Ogilvy, who was in Witchfinder General. He played Simon Templar in Return of the Saint, the series from the late 70s, and Now the Screaming Starts, and a bunch of other great movies that he was in. We've got Katie Carpenter, who was a co-star in the Netflix Haunting of Hill House series. We've got Trina Parks, who played Thumper in Diamonds Are Forever. And then we've got a bunch of great artists like Mark Maddox, comic artist Neil Vokes, and colorist Matt Webb, Craig Hamilton, a bunch of writers, Nancy Collins, Dacre Stoker, Charles Rutledge, Amanda Deweese. And then we've got Professor Morte and Madeline Brumby coming back to join us as well. So we've got just a ton of great folks with us this year.
Yes, a lot of returning guests, or a lot of returning favorites, I should say, as well mm-hmm. as some new blood, and not just like new guests for you guys, but also, you know, a little bit of mix of the classic with the new. You know, having Katie from represent the Haunting of Hill House, that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely, I was really happy when she contacted us, and we're very, very grateful that she's going to be joining us this year.
Is that another show that shoots in Atlanta? I'm just curious about that because I don't
know. It shoots in Atlanta, yes. Yeah, gotcha. Absolutely. I don't know whether the second season is going to shoot here or not, but the first season did.
Gotcha, gotcha. So in addition to the guests, what else, what other kind of program events you have going on?
We've got a really great schedule of events and programming. We're screening some amazing films on 16mm this year, including the 1929 version of The Mysterious Island, which is a real serious rarity. And then on Saturday, we've got Seven Voyages of Sinbad, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. We've got Professor Morte and Madeline Brumby and the Go-Go Ghouls are going to do a Silver Screen Spook Show of Revenge of the Creature in 3D.
3D!
Yeah. We've got The Conqueror Worm, which is the U.S. cut of Witchfinder General, starring Ian Ogilvy, which will be airing. And we're also showing something I'm very excited about, which is the Dracula from 1979 with Frank Langella in its original theatrical color, which it's only appeared on home video in VHS back when it came out in like 1979. Since then, it has been released on all formats of disc in a very monotone chromatic kind of a scale that the director wanted to keep it in. But it's coming out eventually on Blu-ray in the original theatrical color, but we're screening it on 16mm. Then we're also running King Kong Escapes, Robinson Crusoe on Mars, Jack the Giant Killer, just a ton of great stuff. Of course, we've got all of our guests that are going to be talking about their projects. And then we've got on our maker panel, we've got a lot of great stuff. We've got stuff on makeup demos, how to paint monsters with Shane. We've got a making toys and collectibles program, painting masks with Kevin Moe, all kinds of great stuff there. And then on our media track, we've got a lot of talk about Alien and House on Haunted Hill, the anniversary panel for that, and Alien, Amityville Horror, Sixth Sense, Blair Witch, and all kinds of stuff. And we've got our literary art and comics track also with all of our writers talking about what they're doing and various classic works. Dacre Stoker is going to do his presentations on his famous ancestor, who was Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula. And stuff just kind of packed on four different programming tracks all weekend long. We've got gaming. We will have the con suite open again this year for people who want to get snacks and drinks and stuff. Just all kinds of stuff at all hours.
Yeah, it's since it's hotel based, it's one of those conventions that kind of just goes on all night. even if it's absolutely. Not officially, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're screening movies. We've got a Friday night. We've got a Paul Nashy double feature of Dr. Jekyll versus the Werewolf and Frankenstein's Bloody Terror. We'll be running movies all into the late night on Friday and Saturday nights. And then we've also got our Monster Prom on Saturday night, which is always very popular from 8 till midnight or 1 or whenever we wind up closing it up. And we've got DJ Death's Kiss that's going to be spinning tunes there. And Shane Morton, Professor Morte, will be back as the MC this year. So lots of cool stuff for people who want to stay up late.
Yeah, and there's so much good stuff going on during the day and the night. The panels, the model making, the props displayed, right. Just all sorts of cool stuff. And a lot of people there who just love this stuff and are so passionate about it, and it's just great to share that and be in that environment.
I agree. It's something that I've enjoyed at other shows in various other parts of the country, but never really around Atlanta that had this kind of focus on classic horror and sci-fi and monster movies and such. And it's you know, we don't get an enormous crowd every year, but we get a very enthusiastic one.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And hopefully.
We're no Dragon Con, but.
What's that?
I said we're no Dragon Con, but then who is?
Well, you know, and look, I mean, as much as we like Dragon Con, I don't think any of us are willing to do another Dragon Con right now. So,
yeah, that's true.
that's what I love about this as well. I mean, obviously, we want to get as many people there as possible, but the intimacy and the just sort of leisurely feel and just sort of the fandom embrace that this show has is always
fun. Absolutely. It's a place for friends who really enjoy this kind of stuff to come together and have a great weekend and enjoy each other's company.
Yeah. And what I also love too is that, you know, by checking out the panels and talking to people, I always learn. I mean, I'm always learning something about a new project or a new fandom or something that I had no idea that was a thing, because there's just like so many people to talk about so many different things, whether it's literature, classic horror, new horror, filmmaking, comic book making, everything's represented, really.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that you're taking something away from all of this stuff, because that's what we're trying to do. I mean, it's great to get together and just be enthusiastic about stuff that we all love, but it's something else to go and actually present information skills and knowledge that you might otherwise not have access to.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's one of those things too, where obviously, you know, some of the other shows have like the big A-list guests or whatever that are charging insane amounts for a selfie and an autograph or anything like that. The rates for that these people charge are all really reasonable, and you get time with them. You get to spend like a lot of time and learn about things. Like, I will say, and I was really happy to see that this week you announced that Trina Parks was going to be there again, because she was, I mean, for, you think, okay, well, she was in a Bond movie a long time ago, et cetera, et cetera. But her story is absolutely amazing. And just on that small scale alone, I think that's what a lot of your guests sort of represent, that kind of thing.
I agree. And I think that we try to seek out people who have not been to Atlanta, at least recently. This year, I think we've got pretty much everybody other than Trina who lives here. Nobody has really appeared at a show in Atlanta, if ever, in certainly 5 or 10 years. So I'm very excited about meeting Ian Ogilvy and Jane Merrow, people who I had really been fans of as a kid. Pauline Pert, who's from Satanic Rites of Dracula, which is a very underrated film in my opinion. And she's got a lot of great stories and a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. I don't want to book the same guests that all the other horror conventions book, because they go from show to show to show to show to show. And God love them. I mean, they're great people, and they're interesting to listen to and fun to be around. But I've been around them. I want to be around people that I haven't been around as far as guests go, and meet these people who have something to say that I haven't heard before.
Yeah, a different side of things that you would not, a perspective that you would normally get.
Exactly.
So yes, I appreciate it, and I can't sign off on this show enough. So we're hoping that a lot of listeners will come by. As far as getting tickets and all the logistics of that, are they still available online?
They're still available online. They're discounted online. They're $45 for the three-day weekend pass right now. They will be $60 at the door. Single-day passes are also available online right now. And there's also a Monster Prom Pass, which is for Saturday and Sunday and includes a photo op for the Monster Prom and a lanyard and a couple of other little perks, I think. And then they'll be up until probably a few days before the show. And then we'll have to take them down and just greet people at the door and take their money.
Sure. I appreciate that. And, for those people listening too, if we haven't sold it enough, Mike and I are going to be there too. So if you want to come hang out with us for a few days with a lot of other cool people.
We've got a lot of great dealers this year too as well. I forgot to mention that. But our vendor room is looking really good.
Good. Yeah, it's been getting bigger and bigger every year.
Right. Yep. We're very happy about that and happy to have new people and returning favorites as well.
Awesome. Well, where can people go online to get more information and get tickets for now?
For getting tickets, go on to our website at monsteramacon.com. And there'll be a link at the top there in the navigation bar. You can also find us on Facebook under Monsterama. Twitter and Instagram at Go Monsterama Con, I believe.
Yeah, you are represented on all the social media, even if I know you're not doing it yourself.
I do a lot of it, but yeah, I got to have some help here and there.
By the way, you guys are a hoot all year round for social media. You're always popping in with something almost on every other day or something like that. So.
Well, we try and keep it timely and not just all about, selling tickets. We enjoy what we do, and we have had some very successful posts recently. We had one go over 1.5 million, around 1.5 million views last week, which was just crazy to us. That was the biggest one we've ever posted. So
that's amazing.
You can never tell doing that stuff.
Yeah. And you're building a community. So
yeah. Absolutely.
Well, actually, you're already got a community. You're just hopefully having it grow. So,
yeah.
So, we hope to see everybody there. We'll see you there for sure. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks again for helping us get the word out.
Absolutely. Well, now that you've heard all about Monsterama that's going on in a couple weeks, the only other event of note is actually happening this weekend. This Saturday, September 21st, in Avondale Estates, Georgia. It is a one-day music festival called the Southern Surf Stomp Fest. It is 9 bands, and they're all kind of, surf and rockabilly-esque. I'm familiar with two of them, the Mystery Men, as well as the Intoxicators. And let me tell you, they're worth the price of admission alone. Oh, by the way, there is no price of admission. It's free. So
free.
So come on out and see these bands. I will be there. I'll have a little tent set up. Peter and I will be representing Tiki Zombie, selling all sorts of pins and artwork. And we even have some CDs. So if you want to have some music at Stomp Fest, get some music to take home with you, stop by our booth because we've got the Tiki Zombie CD there that we'll be selling as well. So that's this Saturday. Hope to see you out there. And that's it for September. We've got some dates coming up in October of some events that we're going to be at. I'm just getting those in. So by the next episode, you will hear all about our October and beyond schedule. So if you've got a convention that you want us to mention, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. Let's thank our guests for being here. Strangeway, it was awesome to have you up here, my friend.
I appreciate it. I saw your post and I said, I want to be on that podcast. I immediately shot you a message.
Oh, dude, I think you, 30 seconds was the, you know, about the time. You're like, Faber, I'm up there. It's like,
I may or may not be jacked into the internet, you know, just the cord right to the neck. So.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where you're sitting with your back against, away from everybody at the con this year.
We'll just have to make sure it's not years that he's back.
No, yeah. We definitely have to have you more on more often, dude.
I miss being on the podcast. It was a lot of fun. I always have fun with you guys. It's a great topic. Yeah.
What you got going on? What do you want to shout out about?
I actually don't really have too much. I'll be up in Cincinnati Comic Expo next weekend, but I'm going for a personal to get my Serenity poster finally finished. All the signatures from the cast of Firefly.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Yep, I got Marina Bachrin. She's the last one I need.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, it's not that far of a drive. You could do it.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's not that bad.
Nah, that is awesome, man. Well, let's not make it a few years. Let's make it, you know, same time next year for Boys season 2.
At the very least, right?
Exactly. Done. Exactly. And done. Matthew, done. Thank you, my friend, for joining us.
Oh, it was super fun. I could talk like another 2 hours on this subject. loved it.
Very easy. Tell us a little bit more about your podcast, real quick.
The thing I've already kind of shouted out a lot. So, again, wherever your podcatchers you use, we're Polyhedron. Look us up. If you like role-playing games, we talk a lot about it. We're going to be having some guests on soon. We've done a lot of guests in the past, so feel free to go back in the back catalog. Another thing I want to plug that I haven't plugged yet is my buddy of mine has started his own little RPG entertainment group. Called Simulacra Studios, and on the Simulacra TV on Twitch. I'm going to be on one of his shows. It's going to be a D&D game, but it's going to be Acquisitions Incorporated based on the source book that recently came out for 5th edition. So it's going to be like D&D meets office comedy, like with awesome. Existential horror. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be great. I will post out more details when I have them, when it's going to go live, but that is quickly becoming a thing.
Oh, that's awesome. That is really cool. We'll definitely send me the link and we'll put it up on our show notes.
No problem. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, my friend.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about?
I do. You know, as we're trying slowly and surely to recover and get our lives back after Dragon Con, we go smack right into October. Which is the countdown to Halloween. That is a prime time for us here on Earth Station 1. We've got some great programs coming up for you guys scheduled for that month. But in order, you know, October, for me, in the last few years, wouldn't be October without the sound of October, which is, to me now, the Casket Creatures. I definitely recommend people check out their website because they've got all their schedule of where they're going to be. And I will be at a couple of those shows throughout the month of October. And they've got a new album coming out.
Oh, awesome.
Full album. Yep. The full details will be revealed this week. So by the time you hear this, go to Casket Creatures on Facebook, check out their social media, and you'll find out all about their new album. So, Ryan and the guys, we just love them so much. And, I can't wait to hear the new tunes and I can't wait to see them live.
Excellent. 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 Can't wait to hear it. There's always fun band to go see live. They play tons, you know, around the Southeast, not just Atlanta. So definitely check them out, especially throughout the month of October, because it's a little bit of spooky coming our way. So it's pretty cool. My shout out real quick. Judy and I have been watching a new TV show that came to Netflix. It is called The Spy, and it actually stars Sacha Baron Cohen from Borat. But this is a serious role he's playing in, and it is an amazing show. If you get a chance to watch this, please do. It's a true life story of an Israeli spy named Eli Cohen, who was captured in Syria in 1965. And he had been spying on the Syrians for Israel for like almost 7 years. It is an amazing story. And I was shocked by the performance of Sacha Baron Cohen. And please check it out. It is only, I think, 6 episodes and definitely worth checking it, worth it. It is a lot. It's not fun. It is definitely not fun, but it's really good. And speaking of really good, join us again next week when we are going to be doing High Tea with the Queen. That's right, folks. We are going to Downton Abbey. We're going to be doing the film review, and should be a lot of fun visiting a lot of old friends and maybe meeting some new ones and seeing what else is going on with the Crawley family up in England, Southern England. Should be interesting.
It's going to be very like similar to The Boys.
Right? Oh yeah. Very much. Very, you know, especially what happens to, you know, Mary and, oh, we don't want to go there. And not even talking what happens when she goes downstairs. Oof, nope. We're not touching on that one. But it's going to be a ton of fun, and definitely check us out wherever, you know, social media is available. Please, if you get a chance, you know, subscribe to us if it's your first time listening because you like the topic or you met us at Dragon Con, or if, you know, if you want, you know, leave us a review, rate us, wherever social media players you listen to us up, we are found. So just look for Earth Station One. Until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace, and we are done. Boom.
Yay.
That's it. You've been listening to the Earth Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.